You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Imagine rum, molasses, clove, and ginger all packed into a concoction as big as a lily pad. That's a Joe Frogger cookie, and it's the creation of Black entrepreneurs Joe and Lucretia Brown, starting in the late 1700s. Joseph Brown was once enslaved, but ultimately, the couple built a tavern in Marblehead and sold the cookie to sailors. They're now part of New England history, and we are bringing you part of a conversation about them as part of WBUR's Field Guide to Boston. Lauren McCormick of the Marblehead Museum and Cabrilla Bumgartner of Northeastern University told us about this bit of our history last year, and Lauren began with a bit more about the Browns themselves.
Well, Joseph was born in North Kingstown, Rhode Island, actually. He was born enslaved to a man named Beriah Brown, and Beriah basically forced him to serve out his son's time in the Revolutionary War, but for doing so, allowed him his freedom.
So he was enslaved.
He was an enslaved man to Beriah Brown, yes, born in 1749. And after his freedom, which he earns from serving out his master's son's time in the war, he is makes his way up to Marblehead, Massachusetts, on the North Shore of Massachusetts. We don't exactly know how, but when he's there, he meets Lucretia, who was born in Marblehead or Salem, we're not exactly sure where, but in 1773 she's born, and they marry, and they purchase a building on what's called Gingerbread Hill in Marblehead, and they open up a tavern. And they enter into Marblehead myth at this time, myth and lore, because of the amazing cakes and gingerbread cookies, Joe Froggers, that they serve, and they become very much a part of town's history.
So, Cabrilla, why is it important for us to understand the lives of Joseph and Lucretia? How do they help us understand who we are today?
Well, Lucretia and Joseph Brown ran this tavern in Marblehead, and it was apparently very popular among sailors and other clientele. And I was particularly interested in the Black Election Day celebrations that happened at the tavern in May. It was called Election Day, but really it was Election Week. And it was a festive occasion. There was lots of dancing and music. There's an image of Joseph Brown playing the fiddle as people around him dance. And so Black Election Day is an important historical event. It was celebrated annually from the 18th century to the early 19th century. And during Election Day, African Americans often voted for their own official representative. So that history is important, not just because they're African Americans who are running their own tavern. That's important too, the entrepreneurship angle. But I also think it's important that they're part of the Black Election Day celebration. And that's part of North Shore's history and Boston's history and the history of Massachusetts.
So was Black Election Day and that type of celebration unique to our region?
It was not unique to this region. We have examples of Black Election Day celebrations occurring in Rhode Island and Connecticut and also parts of the South and into the Caribbean. So it actually has West African roots. So that's also why it's important. It's actually part of a global history.
So I do want to go to the entrepreneurship part that you did note, Cabrilla, and Lauren, I'll turn to you here. It was really striking because, one, we often don't tell the history of thriving Black entrepreneurs in the late 1700s and early 1800s period, right, in the region.
Correct.
But two, Lucretia was kind of a killer businesswoman. And it turns out very powerful in making the tavern run, in selling goods. So let's talk a little bit more about this woman who really made a business mark in the Marblehead and Salem region.
Absolutely. And she is a fascinating character. And sometimes she gets lost behind Joseph Brown for various reasons. But I love to talk about her because, like you say, she is a female entrepreneur in a time when that in and of itself amongst white and Black individuals is relatively rare. And she's known for picking roses all spring and summer long so that during the winter she can distill them into rose water. And that was a very popular perfume and also something you would use in food back in the mid-19th century. So she's doing that. She is known far and wide for her wedding cakes and various types of cakes. It's told decades later, people remember her for that. And if you wanted a wedding cake in the Marblehead, Salem area, you went to Lucretia Brown. So she really did develop this amazing business and was such a part of the community that decades later, people who remembered her were writing about her in the newspapers and in the reminiscences. And just the fact that they gave so much to the community that years later, people remembered that. And centuries later, we still talk about them.
So her strength as a baker is how we now come full circle to the cookie, which is smelling fabulous. We have a bowl of them here in the middle of the table. So while I talk for a second, I'm going to ask the two of you to go ahead and grab one because we're all going to taste them. So Cabrilla and Lauren, please go ahead. Really basic ingredients like molasses and rum and ground ginger and clove. And as I understand it, Cabrilla, part of the reason that these were legendary, these Joe Frogger cookies, and the Frogger I think comes from, looked like the size of a lily pad, mm-hmm. was that their ingredients made them kind of last. They lasted a really long time, so you could buy them in barrels and put them on ships. And Marblehead was a port town. So they actually physically had quite a long reach as well as historically.
That's right. That's right. The cookies preserved fairly well. So sailors were able to take them with them and keep them for a couple of months, and they would have them at sea.
And Lucretia Lauren was known for, I mean, it's called Gingerbread Hill, which mm-hmm. is where the tavern is. And she was known for, in her wedding cakes, for example, gingerbready kinds of flavors, clovey, spicy kinds of flavors.
Absolutely.
All right. So the number one rule of eating on radio is that you don't all take a bite at once, but we're going to. And I want you to go ahead and react as you take. Mine is crunchy on the edges and nice and chewy on the middle. And I'm going to take a bite here. Everybody's going to taste them. So they're very strong. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of rum, a lot of molasses in there. I got to tell you, this is the kind of thing I imagine a sailor at sea would want to eat after a meal. You know, I'm not sure I'm looking for a Madeline right at that moment. I think this might be more what I like. Lauren, what's your reaction to the cookie?
They're fabulous, right? A lot of people have said they're sort of gingerbread in a cookie form. So you have that little crunch that you don't always get with gingerbread. And like you said, they'll last. And that's what's great. And what's also interesting about them is that they're made with rum and molasses. And those things are products that were produced by enslaved people. And so here you have two people touched by enslavement themselves in various ways who are known for this cookie.
Mm-hmm. Cabrilla, pick it up from there.
Yeah, I think it's delicious.
I'm still eating, by the way. I think it's fantastic, actually. Keep going.
Yes, it's a fairly large cookie, chewy, and but still soft and flavored with these spices. It was thought that Lucretia invented the recipe, but she named the cookie after her husband, after Joe. So they have Joe Frogger's cookies. But it is part of New England history. It's part of African-American foodways that we have this recipe and that we can now make a cookie like this.
And this cookie recipe, as we understand it, made its way all the way to the National Museum of African American History and Culture, where it is not on the menu in the cafe right now. But I understand you had it there. Is that correct?
That's right. I did. I was a bit surprised, actually, to see the cookie on the menu. And when I saw it there, I ordered it, and it was delicious.
So tell us, Cabrilla, being able to track the legacy of a family, an historic family, a family that surprises or defies expectations as we've set them today, through their food, through their commerce, tell me about the importance of that as we work all the time, really, right now, to retell ourselves the story of our history as an America and an American economy.
Right. So as a historian of the Black experience, I'm often trying to tell these stories from the past, from the 18th and 19th centuries. And African Americans did not often leave diaries or letters, which are more traditional narrative sources that historians rely on. And so we have to rely on these other kinds of sources to understand their lives. And that means a cookie recipe can tell us a little bit about African American foodways in New England. I also was able to find Lucretia Brown's will, and I could see the property she owned and the bank accounts that she had. I found her obituary, where she's described as a respectable woman and a useful member of society. And these sources start to allow us to recreate her life and understand her as a person.
So we are talking about a piece of the North Shore's hidden history with Lucretia Brown and Joseph Brown, with Cabrilla Baumgartner from Northeastern University and Lauren McCormick of the Marblehead Museum. Now, the taverns, as I understand it, Lauren, they first purchased the tavern as a home, and they were able to obtain at least at some point a mortgage for that property. And then I'm assuming they lived, what, on the second floor of the property and ran the tavern on the first floor? Do we know?
We don't actually know exactly. We know that Joseph purchased a portion of the building in 1793 and then the remainder of the building in 1796.
Because originally two families purchased it essentially to both live there, and then Joseph purchased the other half from the other family.
Yes, which wasn't unusual in that time period. And so the building still exists, and we don't know exactly how he used it, but certainly some of the memories are of them being on the first floor and Lucretia serving from a bar or a counter and Joseph playing the fiddle, which he was supposedly very good at.
Now, in one account that I read, it was said that he might have only actually known one song on the fiddle, but that he could play it, Yankee Doodle Dandy, I think, but that he could play it a whole bunch of different ways. You're both nodding knowingly, so who wants to answer that one? Cabrilla?
I mean, that's what the sources say. I like to think he probably knew more than one song.
Yeah, just seems like if you could play Yankee Doodle Dandy 50 ways, you could probably think of something else with the same chord progression, at least, that you could also play. All right, so your favorite thing about the history of Lucretia and Joseph Brown, Lauren?
I think it has to go back to the impact they made in the community. And again, the fact that we remember them however many years later, this is, you know, like 100-something years later, we are still talking about them. In fact, we now have a school in Marblehead, an elementary school named for them. We have really highlighted them. There's a conservation property that is named after Joseph Brown. And it's just the memories we have of them and the impact they made on the town.
That was Lauren McCormick, Executive Director of the Marblehead Museum, and Cabrilla Baumgartner, Dean's Associate Professor of History and Africana Studies at Northeastern University, talking with us last year.